The Middle East is a very difficult place. In fact, in the United States, in English, we would say, it is a mess. I hope that translates well for you. In Luke 21:26, the same chapter that Brother Levita quoted from earlier, we read, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven will be shaken. Of course, we know that heaven are the ecclesiastical heavens of earth, the ruling powers of earth. And the Middle East today is the best example we have of how the world is being shaken. The picture you see here is Tony Blair, who was the former Prime Minister of England. In June, he made this statement. The civil war in Syria, with its attendant disintegration, is having its predictable and malign effect. Iraq is now in mortal danger. The whole of the Middle East is under threat. Brethren, my contention to you as we consider these things is that it is a great sign that God is pressing onward to bring His kingdom to the earth. And as we all know, the Middle East becomes the focus of the end time for this present order of things. Even though one may not understand the scriptures, such as Prime Minister Blair, he sees the difficulty that is emerging. This is titled, What Looks Odd on This Map? Can anyone see anything odd on this map? Now, Brother Levita showed you a red space in the map of Russia and Ukraine. Do you see that little red space in the middle? What nation is that? Israel. The green are the Arab lands. As you look at that little red space, if I were in the Middle East and I said, I need to have some more land, I think I will go after Israel, how would you react? Great. Right there. You would laugh. That little land? Well, that is why we know this is no ordinary fight for land. This is God's way of bringing about the nations to devour themselves as they go after Israel. Remember this map, if you remember anything, and tell your neighbors when they laugh about Israel, show them this map. This chart is a chart of organizations of terrorists, those who would destroy not just Iraq, Iran, the United States, Ukraine, but those especially with a goal of destroying Israel. And of course, the one today that we see mostly focused is Hamas. Hamas is a terrorist organization, and it is driven by the Palestinians on the West Bank and Gaza. But you'll recall, Israel also battled Hezbollah when they were in Lebanon. And it's the only war that Israel has ever lost. I believe that is what has given terrorist organizations like Hamas and others the courage to try to go after Israel. And of course we know that that defeating Israel cannot be done because they are indeed God's people. But as you think about all those organizations that are going after Israel, it is incredible that Israel is able to stand. Psalm 83 is a very popular psalm with Bible students. And the interpretation of Psalm 83 is much like the interpretation of chronology. The brethren don't always agree on it. So what I say to you may not be the same as what another brother might say, but I do believe it is a psalm that describes the conflict between Israel and the Arab nations, which you see here. In that psalm, we have an ongoing conflict described. I am not going to read the psalm because it would take some time. But in that psalm, we see Israel as threatened by all of its neighbors. The purpose is to destroy Israel. It begins by saying, "Come, let us wipe them out from being a nation." So I believe Psalm 83 began to be fulfilled as far back as 1948. Israel became a nation in 1948. And in 1950, the Arab League was formed. And of course we know, as soon as Israel declared their independence, they were descended upon from the north and the south. We heard earlier about the 1967 war. There have been many wars which we could talk about, but the point here is the psalm describes the conflict between the Arab nations and Israel. I just want to highlight verse 6, because verse 6 mentions the enemies of Israel in the beginning of this conflict. And those nations that are mentioned today occupy nations that we know very well: Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Syria. I am going to talk about each of those in a little more detail because I think it's an important indication of the fulfillment of this psalm. An important thing to remember is that in this psalm there is no indication of how long this conflict lasts or the results. We must secure that from other scriptures. My purpose here is to identify the conflict that goes on and how that shows us God's plan is marching forward. We will not study all of those scriptures that deal with the resolution because we know the resolution is that Israel emerges as a conqueror eventually. Let's talk about those nations that I mentioned in Psalm 83:6, because those are the very ones that we see conflicts with Israel today. Jordan, just to the east of Israel, is having significant difficulties. Jordan has an economy that has insufficient supplies of water, oil, and other natural resources. Jordan is dependent on Egypt to supply its energy. They have strong support and aid today from the United States, the United Kingdom, and France. Jordan, you'll note, has stayed out of the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. And we see that is what has happened in almost all of these cases, because they have, these nations have problems of their own. Next, we have Lebanon. I mentioned earlier that Lebanon was the only place that allowed that, where Israel lost the war against that terrorist group called Hezbollah. Now, Lebanon has been an outspoken critic of Israel, while it opposes Hezbollah, and Hezbollah continues to threaten the overthrow of that country. Lebanon has great financial difficulty. They have debt. They owe money to other nations 150%, 1.5 times the amount of products that they produce, the value of those products that are produced in their country. That is number 4 in the world, the 4th worst in the world. Now think about that when you see how small Lebanon is. A recurring theme that we see throughout this Middle East is that many of these countries are struggling significantly while Israel is prospering. Next is Iraq. We know Iraq has had many difficulties. The nation is threatened to be divided in half, and probably soon will be. Almost 2 million refugees going out of Iraq, crossing Syrian and Jordan border. You have to be pretty desperate to go into a place like Syria, which has so many difficulties of its own. The problem is that there are no resources to provide for them. Again, economic difficulties abound. Saudi Arabia. Incidentally, I will give a free Bible to anyone that can pronounce this name. That is the official name of King Abdullah. Saudi Arabia is one of the most closed societies in the world. It's ruled by one of the longest reigning families. It is the suspected power behind the rebels in Syria. It supports the current regime in Egypt, which, as we know, is under great turmoil. But note the problems in Saudi Arabia. 50%, 1/2 of the population in Saudi Arabia is under 25 years old. 30% of those that would be of age to work are unemployed. That provides a great opportunity for revolution and discontent. And when we talk about things that have happened, such as the Arab Spring, where we find the revolutions within these countries, I hope as we go through these, you see each of these countries is ripe or is ready for a revolution because of its economic difficulties. We do not know a great deal about Saudi Arabia because it is a very closed nation. We do know, however, that it is a very popular partner of the West and trading because of the amount of money generated by Saudi Arabia. But in my opinion, Saudi Arabia is what we would call a time bomb waiting to blow up. And I believe when Saudi Arabia blows up, the entire Middle East may blow more than it even is today. Syria. Of course, we know Syria has had many great difficulties, but they've had to deal with 2 million refugees from Iraq crossing into their borders. They have their own revolution going on with the rebels. The accusations of using chemical weapons. And each one says they did it. The other says they did it. Syria has warned nations such as the United States to expect another Vietnam if it invades. Those of you old enough to remember Vietnam, remember that it was the only war that the United States lost. But one significant event has happened in the Syrian conflict. It has reintroduced a conflict between the United States and the West and Russia. I will talk more about Russia's activity in a little bit. But as we look at end time prophecy, such as Gog and Magog, we realize that Russia, while it seemed to be a sleeping giant, has reemerged with the desire to recapture its former power. I want to show one example of how the Lord has, I believe, silently provided His oversight in a place such as Israel, and during a time when very few people have realized it. In 2007, the Israeli Defense Forces conducted an operation called Operation Orchard. The United States Central Intelligence Agency confirmed that they had destroyed a nuclear reactor in Syria in 2007. Very few of us ever heard about that, but yet we have confirmed that it's happened. Here you see the picture before and after from the satellite. That nuclear reactor would have had the capability of flying missiles into Israel as well as other areas. That was funded by another nation that I haven't talked about, and that was North Korea, who, as you know, aligns itself with Russia. The United States Intelligence Agency says that Israel has struck Syria 3 times since its civil war began to take out or to destroy many of those factories that were manufacturing munitions which could have destroyed them. The fact that Syria is caught up in its own civil war has provided the opportunity for Israel to destroy the danger that Syria presented to them. I believe those are the subtle workings of the Lord behind the scenes. So whenever we see conflict going on, such as in the Ukraine, we need to look to see what might be behind that in the Lord's plan. And I'm going to suggest something a little while later. Jeremiah 23:7 says, "Therefore, behold, the days cometh, saith the Lord," Jeremiah 23:7, "that they shall no more say, The Lord liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But the Lord liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country, and from all countries whither I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land." We recognize this passage in Jeremiah as a prophecy that the Lord would regather the people of Israel to their land. I mentioned Israel is founded as a nation in 1948. And since that time, we realize there has been significant increase in Jews going back to Israel. Our day, Jeremiah talks about the day coming. I believe that's our day Jeremiah is talking about. Our day has fulfilled this scripture. He said they will no longer say, look at the Lord that delivered the nation of Israel out of Egypt, but look at the Lord that has brought them back from places He had scattered them. If we were to estimate the number of Israelites that left Egypt, most of us would say somewhere around 2 million. It might be a little more, maybe a little less. We know it was 600,000 men. So an estimate of about 2 million is probably right. What has happened in Israel? Zechariah 10:6. This reading that I have in English, I'm going to read, and I realize that it is more difficult to translate, but this is from the Jewish Bible. It says, I will strengthen the house of Yehuda, or the Lord, Jehovah, and save the house of Joseph, or Joseph. I will bring them back in my compassion for them. They will be as if I hadn't driven them out, for I am Adonai, their God, and I will answer them. Note that key statement. They will be as if I hadn't driven them out. When they left the land in 70 AD, we know that Israel was completely destroyed. It was taken over by the Romans. The walls were torn down, just as Jesus had prophesied. And the nation was left without a land, scattered throughout the world. Zechariah tells us that God would bring them back, and it would be just as if He had never driven them out. I am going to highlight just a few of the regathering of Israel to its homeland. During the 1990s, we saw a lot of activity in our areas. Right? The 1990s were a very difficult time for many people. The middle 90s was when the United States and Europe began a great recession driven by its financial policies. Since that time, since the middle of the 1990s, there have been a steady stream of Jews coming from South Africa, from America, and from France. They have either made what is called Aliyah in Hebrew, or it means ascent, going up to the land, or they have purchased property in Israel. Why? Because they want to be prepared to immigrate there as anti-Semitism increases around the world. We are starting to see that significantly increase. When the financial crisis struck the world in 2008, the return to Israel from the West, those prosperous nations of the United States and Europe, was at the highest it had been in 36 years. So while we were suffering and the world was suffering because of the financial problems, Israel was gaining its people. That year, since 2008, 3,324 North American Jews immigrated to Israel. Prior to 1996, there were almost no Jews leaving the United States and immigrating to Israel. The financial crisis suffered by the rest of the world has driven Israel to a prosperity of people. Zechariah 10:10 predicts this very thing. There it says, I will bring them back from the land of Egypt and gather them out of Asher. I will bring them into Gilead and Lebanon until, and the literal translation means, and I will bring them back and there is no more room for them. Now that's an important concept because it does mean eventually Israel must have more land. We all know that the land Israel has today, it's not complete. There is land that they must yet inherit. I will not discuss it here, but I believe that there will be a war with the surrounding nations that we're starting to see indications of today as the Palestinians and others begin to attack Israel, a war that will result in Israel having more land, especially east of the Jordan River. On October 2nd of last year, there was a gathering in Israel. This is in an auditorium in Jerusalem, and it was called One State or One Nation. It was a convention, such as the convention we have here, but of course it was a political convention, not a religious convention, but it was an important one from the standpoint of God's predictions for the Middle East. It urged the continuing building into what is called, what we would call Judea and Samaria, which are those lands that the world calls occupied, to house the new inhabitants that are coming to Israel. So I think Israel will continue to gain its land as more and more immigrate. Zechariah 12, 2 and 3. Zechariah 12, 2 and 3. It says, Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about, when they shall be in the siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. Brethren, is Jerusalem today a burdensome stone? I think it is. No one knows what to do. The United States, its ally for many years, can't refuse to give it aid, but yet doesn't want to get involved in its problems. Europe and the rest of the West that have been friends are trying to pull away from the support of Israel. But yet it is the only democracy in the Middle East, and so it is a burdensome stone. What do we do? That is something that fulfills this scripture. And all those round about fear and tremble at Israel. When you think about something such as the attacks against Israel, I want to mention one thing that I do not have a slide for, but it was passed on to me just a few days ago by Brother Jim Parkinson, who many of you know. Israel has a shield around it called the Iron Dome. Now, it is not a literal shield, like a dome you would live in. But that shield means that when a rocket is launched against Israel, Israel has the ability to detect that rocket coming, determine where it will hit, and if it will hit in a populated area, Israel can shoot its own anti-ballistic missile and take down that missile. That is successful for about 96% of those missiles that are launched against it. Last week, there was a missile launched, and Israel detected that it was going to strike in a highly populated area. The threat would be hundreds, if not 1,000 lives. So, its Iron Dome, as it's called, fired a missile. That missile did not strike its target. So it fired a second missile. That missile did not strike its target. So there were only 4 seconds left before that missile would strike the land and that populated area. Israel's system of defense for its people set off the alarms to be prepared for mass destruction and loss of lives. In that 4 seconds, a great east wind blew out from nowhere, blew that missile off course and into the sea. Israel's reaction, who did they give the credit to? Yes, they gave the credit to God. And a spokesperson from Hamas, a reporter, news reporter, said, "We fire missiles at Israel. Their God shoots them down." So, brethren, let us not think that God's hand isn't at work in Israel today. Although the nation has not turned its heart completely to God, God is protecting it because it is precious to Him. I wanted to show you the growth in Israel. As you can see here, Israel now has a population of about 8.1 million people. In 2014, this year, in the first 6 months of this year, through the end of June, there has been a 50% increase in immigration to Israel over the same period last year. Think of that. While there's great war going on, people are still going to Israel. Why? Because God says, "I will regather them and bring them back." Today, 6.1 million Jews live in Israel. 75% of the total population. You remember when Brother Russell wrote in 1897, and he published that said Israel would blossom and bud and soon Israelis would start to return, and there were signs in his day? Only 6% of the population before 1900 were Jews. Think of that, brethren. That is a true miracle in our day. And need we look any further for fulfillment of prophecy? This is the most significant prophecy we have before us. Now I'm going to give you a quiz. I told you there were a 50% increase in Jews in 2014 going to Israel. I ask you here, can you guess the top two countries in 2014 for Jews making Aliyah, making ascent to Israel? France, what else? Ah, I heard it. Ukraine and France. Think about that, brother. Brother Lebeda talked about the problems in Ukraine, how Russia is dividing that country. And it's a terrible thing for the people. But what has happened during that time? In the first 4 months of this year, over 1,100 Jews have gone back to Israel. God is systematically bringing the Jews from those countries where they had been scattered. And like other places, sometimes it is done through the revolutions that take place in these countries. Well, what about France? France hasn't had a revolution, but it's had 2,200 Jews in the first 4 months go back to Israel. The Ukrainian Revolution removed, remember, the Soviet-backed Viktor Yanukovych as president. The Russian President Putin then sent his troops in, and you saw those terrible pictures of that military action. And in the end, that map that Brother Lebeda showed you, if ever I needed an indication that the Lord would bless this presentation, it was Brother Lebeda's, because I think it verifies to us, despite the difficulty, and we pray for the brethren that are there, yet that country will be split. But meanwhile, those Jews that were there are migrating back to Israel. In France, and incidentally, remember that Ukraine was that significantly large country in the Middle East. France houses the largest Jewish population in Europe. The number three in the world. Remember, it's Israel, the United States, and then France. Today, 37%, over one-third of the French harbor anti-Semitic views in a country where the Jewish leaders are saying that it's the worst climate in decades. Why is it happening now in France? Well, earlier this week, we had a visit with Noemi Brici about this, and Noemi understood what we were mentioning. Yes, the rise of Islam in France. A survey by the Gatestone Institute says the Muslim population of France reached an estimated 6.5 million people in 2013. That means that the Muslim population in France is about 10% of that country's total population of 66 million. France has the largest Muslim population in the European Union in real terms. So is that any wonder that we see the kind of anti-Semitism flowing there? Now, let me shift to kind of the concluding part of this presentation. We've seen the regathering of Israel predicted. We've seen the regathering of Israel take place in our own lifetime and driven recently by either the economic problems faced in the West, the hostilities faced in the East, or the anti-Semitism faced in certain parts of the West where the Muslim population is growing. As a result, Israel now has a significant population of some of the best educated people in the world. Remember those that came from Russia, Ukraine. The Jewish people tend to be very well educated. Israel today is rising in its importance in world trade and in world brains. This is a report called the Global Competitiveness Report. It ranks 144 countries. It says how well they are doing in health, education, technology, innovation, and efficiency of their markets to produce and sell goods. This report ranks the countries in the Middle East this way. Notice that Israel, even though it's one of the smallest in terms of square miles, Israel ranks 26th in the nation, in the world, out of a 26th global ranking, number 82. It's number 82 in size of countries, but it ranks number 26 in its global competitiveness. And note, those countries I mentioned earlier, Lebanon, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Jordan, the only one ahead of Israel is Saudi Arabia. Can you imagine what happens if Saudi Arabia collapses? Israel becomes the most important nation in the Middle East. Let me give you a few facts shown by this report. The percent of Israelis that are engaged in scientific or technological work, the amount that they spend on research, the amount spent on development of new products, in relation to the total amount that they produce as a country, what we call gross domestic product, it's the highest in the world. Number one. Israel ranks number four in the world in scientific activity when you measure the publications per million citizens. Brother Paul Malley, who many of you know from his time at International, used to talk about science being a profession where you either publish or perish, an idiom we use. Israel is very important in publishing scientific information. The total number of scientific articles published is almost 10 times higher than the percentage of its world population. Israel has the highest number of scientists, technicians, and engineers per person, per population in the world. It has 140 scientists, technicians, and engineers per 10,000 employees. The United States only has 85 per 10,000, and Japan only has 83. Israel is the most productive nation. The intellectual capital, the brains of a country, is now generally recognized by most nations as the most important source, by most companies, I'm sorry, as the most important source of advantage. If you work for a computer company, it's the people that can program that are your most important assets. That's true throughout the business world. So those investments that you make in research, innovation, knowledge, marketing, it's the most important determinant of how well that company is going to perform. Recently, there's been a study done about nations. Nations that have demonstrated, you know, an importance of intellectual capital like countries have are those that have been the most successful. Here is Israel's rank in the intellectual capital of the world. Out of 125 countries, this is the growth of Israel's production each year, the value of its goods and services. It ranks number 5 in the world out of 125 countries. Its competitiveness ranks 15 out of 125. Note here, education, number one. Scientists and engineers available to work on new products, number one. The amount of money they spend on research and development. Number one, the amount of what we call venture capital. This is capital that is available for new products, new ideas. Number two in the world. And Israel is doing this while it spends over 50% of the value of its goods and services on its own defense. God has truly blessed Israel. So, brethren, where do we go from here? This was just a little taste of how Israel is moving forward in the prophecies of Scripture. Joel 3, 1 and 2 says, Joel 3, 1 to 12, and I'll read just a little portion of that. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations, and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen. Gather yourselves together and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Nations are gathering momentum against Israel. Rather, it's actually trying to wipe them out as a nation from those that are the heathen around them. Rather, it's anti-Semitism and driving them out. They are gathering against Israel for a great final battle. That battle is the battle of Ezekiel 38. Now, brethren, we could spend another hour discussing Ezekiel 38. But I want to highlight just one verse. Ezekiel 38, 8. The description of the attacks against Israel by Gog and Magog indicates a long period of preparation. Our King James Version says, after many days, Israel is visited. The Rotherham says, after many days, they would muster their forces. The Septuagint version, which remember is the Greek version of the Old Testament that was in use in Jesus' day, says, he shall be prepared after many days, and he shall come at the end of years. Brethren, we should expect it to be years, just as we've seen. These things don't suddenly happen. It's a long period of preparation. That great gathering against Israel, described in Ezekiel 38, describes a great confederacy of nations against Israel. And we can group them into two groups. One, a warlike group, and second, a merchant people. And two motives for Israel. One, to attack Israel is a military motive. Well, we see that happening today. We can see how that would happen. The second is a commercial one. Those waiting to take something from Israel. I think I've suggested you today what might be something that they're looking to take from Israel. What is the capital of Israel? Don't say Jerusalem. It's people. The intellectual capital of Israel are its people. Those nations that come up against it for military purposes are accompanied by a group waiting to take its assets out of the land. I believe those are people. Ezekiel 38:13 describes this group by asking, have you come to take a spoil? Have you assembled your hordes to loot, to carry off silver, gold, livestock, and other wealth? Well, Israel is a small country. It doesn't have a lot, but it has the people that are some of the smartest in the world. And as I mentioned to you, what is the most valuable thing that companies and countries are after? People. Intellectual capital. I'm going to end, brethren, by putting up this chart. And again, this is one we could spend a long time on. Developed by several brethren, but this describes the two groups of Ezekiel. And these are the countries, personally, that I'm watching to see what happens in connection with Israel. Those that are the fighters in the eastern bloc of nations described in Ezekiel 38, which includes the Russians, the Armenians, Georgia, Iran, Black Africa, North Africa, the Germanic nations, and the Turkic nations. But those that are after a spoil are described in another group. And those are ones like Arabia. Remember what I said about Saudi Arabia. The westernmost Europe, where there's many problems. The former colonies such as America, Australia, New Zealand. Sheba and Dedan, Arabia, is at the head of this group. Saudi Arabia, the most powerful country in the Middle East, falls on great difficulties. Where would they look to reestablish themselves as the commercial powerhouse of the Middle East? Brethren, I leave you with that chart for your own discussion and for other discussions. I hope this presentation has been helpful to you, and I'm looking forward, as I hope you are, to hear a further report on what is going on in the nation of Israel. May the Lord bless all of our efforts to proclaim His name and to proclaim His kingdom. The law from Zion and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.